we're witnessing what could be seen as a kind of flaming gauntlet through an evolutionarily turbulent but nevertheless naturally guided process of human development. And this is observed in real time by us as the breaking down of systems of power, the disruption of social norms, an increased polarization in political ideologies, increased conflict probabilities between superpowers, disruptions to scientifically established models. You know, this process of systemic breakage is observed by us through these mediums for two reasons. The first reason is that epigenetic changes, which just means non-genetic changes, are the governing mediums of influence within modern human development, meaning our development is primarily measured through social, political, technological, developmental mediums. These are the platforms upon which the human being develops within modern society, and these types of changes are occurring at a much faster rate than what is permitted through genomic change, changes in the genomes, which can require billions of years of evolutionary time to unfold. We have increased our rate of development through the transition from primarily genetic changes to epigenetic domains of progression and expression. The developmental processes within human evolution that are occurring as we move closer to a new age are rendering the aforementioned sectors, political, social, scientific, insufficient, unfit for purpose, and so they now require the breaking of or the dissolution of what are now inadequate models for society. Because as we move into more exotic terrain, which is precisely what we're doing in many ways, we will require the development of more exotic models. The breakdown of civilization is the best evidence we have to validate the claim that we're undergoing a powerful transformative process, and this process cannot be complete without the dissolution and destruction of outdated, inadequate models of behavior and influence within the collective species. I mean, the perfect example of this that can be found within nature is the metamorphosis of a caterpillar into a butterfly. In order for that transformation to take place, the now outdated and developmentally inadequate components of the caterpillar are completely destroyed. They are literally melted down to their most basic materials, and from the chrysalis of that destruction arises an entirely new and dazzling creature. And so we are in the chrysalis of the human condition. We are witnessing in real time the dissolution of inadequate patterns, of insufficient models, of incapable systems. We're bearing witness to the metamorphosis, and make no mistake, this will require a sufficient level of stress to be placed upon the current state of human affairs. And correct me if I'm wrong, but this is precisely what we're seeing occur in pretty much every sector of society that's worth mentioning. We honestly are a fascinating species. We have completely transformed what it means for the nature of this planet to express itself. We've diverged from every other example of nature on this planet. We are the evolutionary outlier. And this has been achieved through the development primarily, I imagine, of complex language, which permitted for a more dynamic and multifaceted and exponential rate of development to occur. The development of language was the initial spark illuminating the road that led us from the life of the nomadic hunter-gatherer, who transformed over a drastically short period of evolutionary time into the type of technologically advanced civilization we bear witness to. Nothing else within the nature of this planet has done this, at least nothing that we currently recognize or understand, but it's clear that there is something profoundly different about the human being when you compare it to everything else that we know of that has arisen from nature. Our rate of development is beyond incomprehensible when compared with the evolutionary developments that have taken place across the board. We've swapped billions of years of evolution for thousands of years, and now we're in an age where this rate of development is increasing day by day as we frantically innovate our way into some new domain of experience that we're stepping ever closer towards. through the propagation of technology. And so what truly separates us from the rest of observed nature is language, the ability to communicate complex messages, retain this information through the usage of symbols and the development of oral traditions, and to subsequently pass this knowledge on through generational time, from parent to child, from chieftain to tribe, and on it went. These messages, teachings, insights, and innovations were sent into the future by the generation before them, where this knowledge was then maintained, further developed upon, and sent onwards again into the next generation. It's through this act of passing down knowledge over hundreds and thousands of years that caused us to be what we are today. And we're the only known example within nature on planet Earth, that we know of at least, that has achieved this level of complex cognition, communication, and the preserving of information in various forms through generational time. And so now we're faced with a highly complex, highly dynamic world that has within it an incredible number of moving parts that form the machine of modern human civilization. And I believe that what we're witnessing through the various breakdowns occurring in civilization is the sounding of alarms and the flashing of signal lights informing us of a required replacement of what are now outdated or broken parts to the societal machine of the human species. And I don't think this is a breakdown of the entire engine. I think what we're witnessing is more like a flat tire or an overheated radiator, some rusted, inoperable machinery. It's something that's incredibly inconvenient but is not beyond repair or replacement. And to stick with the vehicle analogy, we're only really a few miles from the nearest repair shop, and the methods through which we can fix and replace our broken parts are not too far away and are coming ever closer. We will likely be dealing with, obviously, a more automated society, but I think that one of the knock-on effects of an automated society would be that the cost of living is reduced in most sectors, and this could facilitate an economic boom that will stimulate global economies and provide people with more money and more free time to pursue their own goals, more opportunities for personal development. And this is what could occur. It's within the realms of possibility, but it will require more turbulent years for it to be fully realized, in my opinion, and it will rely upon a necessary shift in collective mindsets, most notably within systems of leadership or governance, and that is highly unlikely to occur unless stimulated by other situations. What is important for me to highlight is that it's not one single change, such as the rise of artificial intelligence, that will lay the groundwork for increased freedoms, opportunities, resources, and a transition in societal and systemic behaviors. In fact, artificial intelligence and technological development alone worries me deeply. It's the emergence of multiple catalysts at the same time, the interweaving of these disruptors, that allows space for a more optimistic development to occur, just because the road of technological development above all else is a road lined with weapons pointed in each direction, and so is ultimately a road towards destruction, in my opinion. And so I wanted to highlight this now so that you don't get the impression that I believe technology alone will solve all of our problems, but for now we're discussing this first disruptor, and we've talked about the disturbance to industry and employability that this transition into automation will cause. But there is a second, more disturbing concern that arises from conversations about the development of more sophisticated expressions of AI, and that's the fear of the rise of sentient artificial intelligence, the rise of a machine mind that is completely self-aware and is capable of its own paths of decision-making, for lack of a better description, is a conscious entity thinking for itself and acting on its own interests. this is the imagined precursor for the Terminator-style robotic apocalypse that, you know, many futurists predict. And to be fair, it would seem that we are on the knife's edge period of the human story from which an intelligence such as this could emerge. And I think this is a fear that many of us have, that a day would come where such an intelligence would consider humans to be inadequate and unfit for purpose in relation to the process of evolution into the stars. The flip side to this is the prediction of an inevitable merging between the human body and the artificial landscape, a biomechanical symbiosis between creator and created. And this to me, although perhaps not favorable to many, myself included to a certain degree, it is nevertheless already occurring. And if we're being honest with our situation, it's been occurring since the dawn of technology, from the moment we used our very first tools, from the day the first spear was sharpened, the first strike of flint to form flame, the first bow and arrow crafted, the moment we created the first tool. We began along the path of technological integration, creating extensions of our influence through technologies. And we've now arrived at a point in the human story where our technologies have resulted in the development of, amongst other things, an electronic neurosphere of real-time global information exchange called the Internet, which we have instantaneous access to via small rectangles that fit into our pockets. And we're now beginning to transition towards wearable technology like smartwatches and other such devices. And so, you see, we've been gradually merging with technologies through the entirety of human history, but it's in our time, that this rate of convergence has increased exponentially. The momentum is increasing year by year. And so with the development of neurologically embedded, artificially intelligent circuits, such as those produced and studied by people like Elon Musk through his company Neuralink, we've taken another bold step towards the edge of the organic human existence, and we're now dipping our feet deeper into the digital ocean. And it seems to me that it's less about whether or not we will, but more of a question of when we will decide to dive into this new terrain and explore its potential. And this, for all intents and purposes, is a very real transcendence of the human species, the dissolution of the organic human in favor of a biosynthetic avatar of some form, could very well be the metamorphic event of an evolutionarily guided and therefore inevitable future outcome that is now close upon the horizon. And perhaps the monumentality of this transformative event in the human story is the source of the intuitively received shockwaves that have echoed through time, sensed by our mystics and spiritual teachers, the crafters and keepers of our theologic traditions, when they speak of a coming apocalypse. Perhaps it's the apocalypse of the organic being and the birth of an entirely new representation of nature's ability to express itself through the human template and its development of and eventual convergence with technology. The emerging from the chrysalis of organic life into an entirely new terrain of experience, like the caterpillar to the butterfly, transforming from a ground-based consumer to an airborne pollinator. This could very well be our destiny, to go from a planetary-based consumer to a pollinator of the cosmos. It makes me think of that famous crop circle that I believe it's yet to be debunked, but regardless of its provenance, it's still a striking image. And the photo was it's taken from a helicopter, and it shows a human being at an extremely large scale. It takes up the entire field, and protruding from behind the body are the wings of a butterfly. And it's a very provocative and highly symbolic example of what I'm referring to here with this possible metamorphic conclusion to our current mode of existence. And I know, it all sounds like the plot for a great film, but the truth of the matter is, with even a casual glance towards the ongoing rate of developmental change in the sectors that are geared towards producing technologies, and most notably the focus on artificial intelligence, it seems to be an irrefutable trajectory towards which we are moving at faster and faster rates every day. And so the merging of humans with technology, with artificial intelligence, a biosynthetic convergence, would appear to be an inevitable checkpoint on the road. It may even be a necessary developmental prerequisite, a necessary transition that is required for us to adequately explore the stars. However, it is my opinion that we've demonstrated, and I'm sure you would all agree, time and time again, that we're incapable of handling the technologies we have developed already in a responsible manner, and we're more inclined towards the development of advanced weapon systems than we are towards the development of exploratory vessels or advancements for the benefit of society as a whole on a global scale. I think this too only requires a casual glance for it to be observed and made evident. We are an immature species with a reduced level of consciousness as to what was maintained and promoted by our most ancient and shamanic ancestors. We have severed our connection to spirit, to nature. These are unimportant things to our so-called leaders when compared to financial incentives and the accumulation of further states of power and influence. And so, yes, there are plenty of reasons to be pessimistic about technology, and there is certainly reason to be skeptical of any sort of divine transcendence into a techno-spiritual utopia if we're simply going down the road of technological development above all else. Within most notably the more spiritually or metaphysically inclined sections of the UFO community, when discussing the usage of psychedelics, and I want to address it because I do find it to be contradictory, and this is the condemning of psychedelics by people who consider meditation to be more beneficial. Now, the reason that it's usually given for the favoring of meditation over psychedelics is that meditation teaches you discipline and allows for a natural spiritual development to occur. Taking psychedelics is an artificial way of achieving this, and so you will likely not achieve the same levels of spiritual completion through the medium of psychoactive substances than you would through disciplined transcendental forms of meditatively induced conscious expansion. I think it's important for me to say that I am a proponent and participator of meditative techniques, and so I recognize and appreciate the benefits of meditation. This is definitely not me trying to knock meditation, but there is a glaring contradiction here, because I think the majority of meditative advocates would agree that the internal and external worlds are ultimately nothing more than a dualistic illusion, that all things are fundamentally one thing, that we're simply the energy of existence expressing itself in various states. And so if you hold to that belief while simultaneously considering something within that field of oneness to be artificial, such as psychedelics, even ones that arise from the natural planetary flora and through your own biochemistry, and to favor a different method as so-called natural, such as meditation, which, to be honest, appears to be a form of access to and influence of biochemical exchanges to induce altered states, it's evidence of someone who is still very much involved in a dualistic perspective, because you consider there to be some sort of separation. So if you align yourself with the idea of a universal energy being at the root source of all creation, within that field of creative energy, can we really determine something to be more natural than anything else? I feel this rings especially true for the most potent psychedelic compound to ever be discovered, dimethyltryptamine, better known as DMT, which is not only present in much of the flora and fauna of planet Earth, including being endogenous to the brains of human beings, but even more revelatory was a recent discovery put forward in a scientific paper published in 2019, which I will include in the description box below for anyone interested, titled Biosynthesis and Extracellular Concentrations of Dimethyltryptamine in Mammalian Brains. Now, prior to this study, it was believed that the DMT quantities within the human biochemical framework were present only in trace amounts and was considered essentially inconsequential to the day-to-day operating of the brain-body interface. However, This recent study shows that DMT has been found to be of similar concentrations within the brain's neural chemistry as serotonin, and without serotonin, you would die. It's a required hormone for the functioning of nerve cells. It's a key hormone that stabilizes our mood, feelings of well-being and happiness. It enables brain cells and other nervous system cells to communicate with each other, and it helps with sleeping, eating, and digestion. It impacts your entire body. So for us to discover that the most potent psychedelic compound in existence, one that when smoked or taken orally with a monoamine oxidase inhibitor to bypass the stomach acid barrier, can have the effect of ejecting you from your physical body and placing you into a hyperspatial dimensional realm where everything from the perception of time to the modalities of language are shifted into varying degrees of expression that don't exist or have at least not been successfully perturbed within our normal states of awareness. And within these realms exist what can only really be described as intelligent entities, many of them beyond any sort of syntactical description, that seem to be capable of bestowing knowledge, promoting a sense of self-realization, the breaking of negative behavioral patterns in your life. Some would even say the provision of spiritual insight into the nature of being. And all of this is made possible by a chemical that is not only endogenous to our neurological makeup, but has recently been discovered to potentially be present at similar levels to a fundamental bodily hormone, serotonin. Well, this means that DMT has been moved from the trace amount inconsequential to functions category to the fundamental building block of bodily function category. And this staggering realization is going to start opening some very interesting doors, behind which exist some very interesting questions. One question being, if DMT is fundamental, like serotonin, for the mediating of our sense of reality, then is reality itself a partial hallucination? I mean, if all that is required is one small tweak in the concentrations of an endogenous biochemical within the human brain for the office walls around you to melt away as you're transported into a hyperdimensional realm that many claim to feel more real than reality itself, a realm that is seemingly inhabited by exotic entities that, for lack of a better description, are extraterrestrial in nature, then how can we possibly begin to adequately define reality if we are only operating on the baseline perceptions that arise from our current resting state of consciousness, when just around the corner, available to us through our own biochemistry, is a portal into transcendental realms inhabited by otherwise unseen entities? I mean, this is where science and spirituality collide in an epic fashion, and from this collision, we may see the glimpse of the introduction of what could be called spirit science, a scientific endeavor to comprehend the abstract realm of the transcendental that rational science is being faced with through the study of psychedelics. And to bring this back to my comments about psychedelics versus meditation, it would seem to me that the achieving of transcendental states of meditation through discipline and practice, states that send the meditator into astral realms, states that allow for the intuitive downloading of information from beyond their own influence, or that allow for communication with otherwise unseen intelligences, I mean, it would seem quite apparent to me that these states are being induced through a conscious, meditatively induced perturbing of the pineal gland, which is the gland in the brain responsible for the synthesis and secretion of dimethyltryptamine. I think that these transcendental meditative states are simply a method of hacking into your own brain chemistry and increasing your body's natural levels of DMT by a significant enough percentage to elicit a change in your state of awareness. I mean, one of the early onset experiences that people describe from DMT is that there is a feeling of vibration, of energy, almost as if someone has rung a cymbal and everything's reverberating and shaking. this is also a very similar experience from people that go into transcendental meditative states. The onset experience is this feeling of energy rushing through you, of vibration, of oscillation. And so it really does seem as if they are hacking into and increasing the concentrations of DMT. And so for those of you who believe that psychedelics are the cheetah's way to enlightenment, it would seem to me that those using ayahuasca and other forms of DMT are doing the same thing you're doing, only they are doing it faster, more efficiently, and through a more easily induced method, and the effect is the same, which is an increase in DMT within the body and the subsequent experiences that one can undergo through such an increase. And so whether you like to sit quietly and perturb the pineal gland through meditation, or whether you like to take a so-called externally sourced form of DMT into your system, it really doesn't seem to make a difference other than the fact that one of these methods is easier to perform than the other. So if you want to see a rapid global overhaul in our species' collective behaviors through an increased understanding of and appreciation for the spirit of life, of nature, the nature of our own existence, this is not a collective overhaul that's going to take place through everyday people suddenly taking an interest in transcendental meditation. I mean, I just don't personally see how this would occur in the Western mind, absent a significant catalyst, some form of accelerant that would lead us towards the incorporation of something like meditation into our lives. Taking an interest in meditation will likely follow from the initial catalysts that accelerate collective behavioral change. It will not be the cause of it. It will likely be a symptom that arises from the change. But the changes required are required at a faster rate than what meditation can provide us, because truly transcendentally transformative experiences within meditation are not usually made available to the untrained initiate. And although the disciplinary journey into the mastery of meditation is an admirable feat, it's not a feat that we can expect large percentages of modern society to embrace out of nowhere. And so if we want to get to a place where each and every one of us is appreciating and perhaps involving themselves in a daily routine of deep meditation, if you believe that the insights obtained through such a practice would be beneficial to the collective species, and I would be in full agreement with all of that, but if we want to get there, we're going to require an initial boost to our consciousness in order for us to wake up to that reality in a clearer vision and with stronger intention. If you view the collective species as a single human being, this is an incredibly disturbed individual that we're faced with, and perhaps what the person really needs is some very strong medicine to wake them up to their negative behavioral patterns. And I think if we want to see large percentages of the population embrace meditation and other such practices, we're going to need some very strong medicine first in order to be in a position to wake up out of our delusions. And so what is required, really, is for more people to undergo a personal, experiential, and ultimately transformative journey. And this needs to be a journey that can be made available with relative ease, one that does not require strenuous discipline. It does not require them to sit still for hours in an attempt to resist the chattering monkey mind, or for them to suspend their rational disbelief regarding the benefits that might arise from methods and traditions of any sort of faith-based system. What we need is a more democratic, neutral, freely available stimulus, and this is why I see this current resurgence of interest in the study of psychoactive substances to be extremely interesting and entirely non-coincidental when juxtaposed with the current state of affairs in the modern world. We're witnessing a changing of the guard, and one of those changes is the acceptance of psychedelic compounds within society that have been condemned and ridiculed unnecessarily for decades. Not too dissimilar from the ridicule and stigmatization that is present when discussing the UFO issue. And I find it interesting that the stigma behind both of these subjects is beginning to dissipate at the same time within modern society. The Western world does not by and large entertain or at least take serious the notion of mysticism or meditation or of the beneficial usage of psychoactive substances, although this is gradually shifting with the younger generations who are of a more open mind and of a less monotheistically reinforced and restrictive set of ideologies. However, the most notable change of late is the fact that these ideas are beginning to be entertained through the Western mind's most cherished arena, which is the arena of science. The benefits of psychoactive research and the usage of psychoactive compounds for mitigating mental health issues, as well as for the purpose of probing the general mystery of consciousness itself, are now being scrutinized and realized by respected establishments of Western medicinal science, of neurology and pharmacology and psychology. And so you see, the resurgence of psychedelic study in the Western arena of science is essentially the Western method for reviving a more spiritual component to our methods of approach and our models of reality. And we should understand the process of our world by now. It's a process that incorporates technology, science, rationalism, materialism, and industry. And so the free-flowing spirit of nature is coming into this highly rigid system in the only way that it can, through the guise of science. And it's the most fantastic Trojan horse situation, because it is through the increased study of psychedelics that the Western world will finally receive a large dose, pun intended, of the immaterial, of the abstract, of the spiritual, of the transcendental, and this in of itself will stimulate, by cause of necessity, a reshuffling of models within modern science and medicine. And this will have the trickle-down effect of stimulating corporate involvement, which in turn transitions into market value and consumerism. I mean, cannabis is a good example of this. Once cannabis entered back into the scene and was embraced by modern science, we've witnessed the pharma corporate sector do what it does best and capitalize on this, which has produced, at least in large portions of America and all of Canada, a drastic change of perspective in relation to cannabis from a political, medicinal, and social perspective. You see how this trickle-down influence of scientific revelation that leads to pharmacological interest, which transitions into corporate development, leading to an established market value and the creation of consumer items, takes effect. And so one of the next in line, in my opinion, will be psychedelics like DMT and psilocybin, and once they're embraced fully by modern science and medicines, the same effect will occur. The corporate pharmaceutical arenas will jump in and capitalize on this, and you will see the development of neural enhancers, of cognition boosters, and other forms of pharmacologically developed psychoactive medicines and supplements. And so from this, you will see the same trickle-down process, which will result in society embracing psychedelics once again after a generational drought that was stimulated by essentially the proliferation of unnecessary and unscientific propaganda and a fear from government control structures that they might lose their influence as everyone begins to realize that perhaps warmongering territorial control freaks might not be the best choice of leadership going forward. And so just like the emergence of serious conversations about UFOs, society will need to acclimate to a transition from social rejection to social acceptance when it comes to psychedelics. But as we can see, the trend now is the embracing of these compounds under the lens of scientific scrutiny. It's only a matter of time before this transitions into industry and society at large. And with this transition, one of the causal effects that will arise from this will be a more empathically developed society that explores and advances its state of consciousness. And a consequence of this, as many who have used psychedelics can attest to, is that you care more about life, about love, about community, about peaceful solutions. These are the side effects of a culture that embraces the perturbing of the mind through the use of psychedelics. I also find it interesting that this disruptive series of breakthroughs that are taking place within the arena of medicinal, pharmacological, neurological sciences, which above all else are challenging our current models for consciousness, are emerging at a time when disruptive issues are challenging the status quo within modern science as it relates to advanced physics, energy generation, and material engineering. And this disruption has been stimulated by the emergence of the UFO phenomenon from the cast-aside underground culture of ufology to the stage of modern political and social discourse in the United States of America, with the US government itself proclaiming that it cannot explain some of the recent incidents that have occurred between US Navy personnel and UFOs, or what are now being referred to as unidentified aerial phenomena, UAP, as a means of distancing the United States government from the controversial history of UFOs and their involvement in the issue over the course of several decades. I don't see this as a coincidence. The emergence of these two issues, the psychedelics and the UFOs, these would appear to be, in my mind, perfect potential catalysts for a fast-acting overhaul in collective behavior. On one side, you have substances that not only allow for the development of a more empathic and connected society, but on significant enough doses can transport you to other dimensional realms inhabited by what can only really be considered as intelligent extraterrestrial entities who can offer you spiritual or morally orientated revelations for the purpose of personal self-development, and in doing so, defy all previous expectations of what can occur through the altering of biochemical and neurological states, which seem to permit for an expansion of the conscious mind in a way not too dissimilar from the dual functionality of a photon, as it expands from a localized particle with a coordinated location in time and space to a non-local wave of potential energy. So a human mind can expand beyond the localized restrictions of the body and move into a non-local wave function state of awareness. And on the other side of this, you have hyper-advanced technologies that break apart the foundations of our laws of physics, of aerodynamics, of gravity, the UFO. And since it would appear to be a feat we are incapable of, it creates the necessary space for us to incorporate the existence of another intelligence, of an alien intelligence, perhaps even a multidimensional intelligence. And within this subject of UFOs, there is an unavoidable bleed-over effect from the material to the immaterial, from the physical object to the psychic construct, from the generic to the psychedelic. There are many similarities between the psychedelic conversation and the UFO conversation, and the keystone that seems to exist within the nexus of these two issues is consciousness.